Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now, I will turn the meeting over to Ms. Martha Vernon. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you so much, Amy, and thank you to everyone who's joining us today. As Amy said, my name is Martha Vernon, and I am a member of the America's Leadership Team driving this very important announcement. I'd like to welcome you all to a pre-training session that will describe the changes IBM Software Group is making in our licensing structure. Now, I know that when a vendor discusses their licensing structure, customers immediately become concerned that we will be raising our prices. I want to assure you, though, that we are not raising our prices with this announcement. You can be comfortable that your customers' current budgets will not be impacted. You may not have focused on it, but in the past year, software licensing has become much more complicated. And I'm not just talking about IBM, but about most middleware vendors in the industry. Like our competitors, we have introduced a number of exceptions to our one license per processor policy, and in effect introduced a series of pricing tiers or levels. This has occurred because of the changes in underlying processor technology. Hardware vendors have begun the widespread adoption of technologies such as multi-core, which impacts the way middleware vendors, including IBM, license their software. On July 25th, IBM will be announcing a new processor value unit licensing structure. This new structure provides a flexible foundation for our middleware licensing that addresses these current and future hardware changes and also provides clarity to our licensing approach. This announcement will impact all products in IBM's portfolio which currently use the per-processor licensing metric, which includes portions of the DB2, Lotus, Tivoli, and WebSphere brands. Rational is the only brand which will remain unaffected by this announcement. Please remember that, like any other pre-announcement training, this information is IBM confidential until it is announced on July 25th and should not be discussed with anyone until then. Now, to tell you more about the announcement, I would like to introduce Sue Swanson and Mike Ryan. Sue is the manager of the Passport Advantage program, and Mike is responsible for worldwide business partner enablement. Before I turn the call over to Sue, a quick reminder that the presentations are on the website that were sent to you in your confirmation note. We will have time for questions and answers between each module, so I encourage you to take notes and queue up those questions. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Sue. Good afternoon, Sue.
Thank you, Martha, and good afternoon to you all. My name is Sue Swanson, and as Martha said, I manage the Passport Advantage program in Software Group headquarters, and I have a lot of experience in pricing and licensing. What I'm going to talk to you about today is an announcement that IBM is making on July 25th, and this is an evolution of our software licensing structure, and we hope that it will prove to be a sustainable structure for the future. And as I'm going to emphasize several times, and we want to emphasize several times, this does not change a customer's price today, but builds a foundation for the future. And I'm going to emphasize again, as Martha said, remember this is IBM confidential and until July 25th. Thank you. If you would please move to page two. What I'm going to describe to you today is what is being announced and how it will be implemented. I'm going to start by giving you a brief history of the licensing marketplace and a brief history of the hardware technologies, especially multi-core chips, that are impacting software licensing. And to do this, we'll do some key definitions of hardware terms and software terms. With this background, then I will describe how IBM and most other middleware vendors have adapted their current licensing structures to address all these changes. And then we will look at the approach that IBM is announcing on July 25th called Processor Value Units. Let me include that the key benefit is we are changing the licensing structure but not changing the net price to customers. So let's move to page three. What will we be announcing? We are announcing a replacement for our per-processor licensing for all middleware available through Passport Advantage that uses the per-processor metric. There are some other products inside Passport Advantage which use other pricing metrics, such as user-based pricing, et cetera, and these metrics are not going to be affected by this announcement. Only those products which are licensed per processor are impacted. We hope we have come up with a simple conversion for the existing per processor licenses, and I'll show you this later in the presentation. And a key feature, once again, I'm sorry I keep saying this, is that we are not changing the current prices our customers pay for middleware on current technologies. I will say that in some countries, due to minor rounding problems and changes, there may be a slight difference in price, but we have looked at them all, and they're no more than plus or minus 1% in the price difference. As I mentioned, this is an announcement will take place on July 25th, and please do not discuss it outside of yourselves until that time without asking us first. Okay, let's go to page 4. First, let's look at a little bit of the existing license environment. Historically, we and other middleware vendors have required one processor license for each core on the server. This is what we refer to as full capacity licensing. In the picture you see on the top of this page, we show a server with four processor cores. And historically, we have required four per processor license entitlements in this environment. In recent years, or about a year ago, we made sub-capacity licensing available when a customer didn't need to license all of the processors in the server. Sub-capacity uses separate part numbers and has a set of conditions which must be met. Two of these conditions are that the customer must run a no-charge compliance tool, and they must submit a report to IBM on their usage quarterly. If you're interested in learning more about subcapacity licensing, please refer to the subcapacity page on the Passport Advantage website. To give you a sense of this announcement, let me tell you a little bit about the IBM distributed software portfolio. It's just over half of our revenue, and that's Passport Advantage revenue basically, uses the per-processor licensing charge metric. And of that group, over half of our revenue, a little over half of those are on x86-based systems, remainder on RISC or Itanium. Going forward, we expect that x86 will grow faster than RISC, and in fact, we expect it will grow faster by about 10 points. And RISC is around 2% growth rate, and x86 about 12% growth rate. Please go to the next page. Before we go any further, let's talk about some hardware terms which are really important in software licensing. From a software perspective, the core is the most important component of the server. It's the functional unit that actually executes the software instructions. One or more cores can be placed on a chip. When there is more than one core on a chip, it's called a multi-core chip. These chips then plug into what is called a socket and on a server. At some time or another, you might have seen pins coming out of the back of a chip. These pins are what plug the chip into the socket on the system board in the server. Prior to the introduction of x86 dual-core chips in 2005, there wasn't much of a question about what was a processor. IBM originally introduced dual-core chips in 2001, but both the individual cores were faster than the previous generation of cores. And by putting two of them on the same chip, customers saw their performance improve over two times for the chip as a whole. As a result, almost everyone agreed the processor should continue to be defined as this processor core, and users were getting the full benefit of each processor core on the chip, and therefore we required two processor licenses. However, when x86 dual-core chips were introduced, Intel and IBM implemented performance improvements differently. They began focusing their performance improvements at the chip level, not at the processor core level. So with their dual-core chips, Intel and AMD actually slowed down the processors so that they could generate less power and generate less heat, but they put two processor cores on a chip, and that still improved the performance at the chip level. IBM, as do most middleware vendors, continue to define a processor as the core processor equals core in IBM lingo, because this is where the software actually executes. However, most hardware vendors have followed Intel and AMD's lead, and now they've defined the processor as a chip. And if you think about it, they can't sell half a chip, but software can run on half a chip or on a processor core. As you can imagine, this has led to confusion in the marketplace. So let me emphasize, software vendors tend to define a processor as a processor core or core. Hardware or chip vendors tend to define a processor as the chip. For the remainder of this presentation, and in fact in any licensing discussion from IBM Software Group, you should be aware that we, the terms processor and core, are used interchangeably. And once again, processor equals a core, and that's our current licensing vehicle. I'm sure you're already aware that in today's marketplace, the number of processors that are required for a particular workload can now vary by processor type. With more processors required, when a processor core is relatively slower. This difference now impacts the way a customer has to evaluate alternative platforms when considering where to implement an application, especially regarding the number of middleware applications licenses required. In the bottom of page 5, we show an example for illustrative purposes of the same workload on one technology requiring 6 processor cores and another technology requiring 3 processor cores. If we didn't modify our licensing policy, we would require 6 licenses on the left and 3 licenses on the right. That clearly is not fair, and it put lots of pressure on our licensing practices. Let's move to page 6. Another thing that you need to understand is how hardware vendors have delivered performance improvements over time. Customers have become accustomed to a reduction in the price per unit of throughput when they buy new technology. At the top of this chart, what we're showing is an example of a constant workload, which in 1 year might require 4 processor cores and then 4 licenses to run a certain workload, and 2 years later only require 2 processor cores and 2 licenses to run the same workload. This is sometimes referred to as Moore's Law: processor performance doubles every 18 to 24 months. And this is historically what's been happening in most of our processors. And IBM, with our power architecture, has continued to improve performance improvements this way. Another way to improve system performance is to place more than one processor core on a single chip. This, as you saw on the previous page, is what we call a multi-core chip. And although the total chip-level performance is less than 2 times the sum of the individual processors, it has proven a very effective way to provide additional performance. Hardware vendors can use either of these approaches individually, in other words, improve performance of the core or improve performance of the chip, or they can use some combination of the two. Unlike IBM, other vendors, including Intel and AMD, have primarily adopted the multi-core approach to provide improved performance. This strategy started with the introduction of the first dual-core chips in April of 2005. They did this in order to reduce power and heat. In fact, they actually slowed their processor cores down in these chips compared to the previous generation of single-core chips, but increased overall chip performance by placing 2 cores on a chip. Going forward, it is expected that Intel and AMD, their processor core performance will be flat. Therefore, they will improve performance by putting more processor cores on a chip. And in fact, in the next 6 to 9 months, we expect them to be delivering what we call quad cores. And once again, IBM, primarily with its power architecture, has continued to improve performance of its processor cores. As a result of these differing strategies, performance will continue to diverge over time, with some processor cores becoming faster at the processor level, depending on what strategy you choose to implement. For us, for middleware vendors, this processor core performance disparity creates a dilemma regarding price. Do you set your prices targeting the slower processors, thus providing a bargain to those with the faster processors? Or do you set the prices based on the fastest processors available and effectively overcharge those with the slowest processors? let's move to page 7 and see how middleware vendors have responded to this. Middleware vendors have responded to this dilemma by requiring a different number of licenses for some processor types. The changes in middleware licensing began with the x86 dual-core chips announced last year. Since customers were getting much less than a 2x performance improvement over the previous generation single-core chips, IBM made an exception to our one license per processor core, and we decided to only require one license entitlement for the two cores on the x86 dual-core chip. We called that our one-for-two policy, and it basically resulted in what we call fractional licenses. Technically, it was half a license required per processor core. Then at the end of last year, Sun announced a new server with something called the T1 octa-core chip. That code name was Niagara, 8 cores on a chip. And additional exceptions were made since it had slightly different performance characteristics. All this has added complexity to software licensing for both vendors and our customers. In effect, the industry has introduced multiple licensing levels or tiers for software licensing. And you can see at the box on the bottom of chart 7, we detail what each middleware vendor's licensing policies are. IBM today has 3 separate tiers. Oracle has the most at 4 right now. And though we all define a processor as a core, but in effect, customers have to deal with fractional licenses at the core level. And we have heard from our customers that fractional licensing and the rules around it are confusing. Let me make one more comment while looking at this table of effective licenses per core. Some vendors might like IBM to compare them with IBM only on the number of software licenses required. As you can see, on some platforms, IBM requires more effective licenses than others do. However, the number of licenses is only half the story. I'm sure you know that the price you pay is the product of the price per unit times the quantity. With license entitlement shown here, you're only talking about the quantity, and it's only half the story. On page 9 of this presentation, which we'll go to in a minute, I will take you through how to evaluate the real bottom line impact. But let's first go and see why this gets more complex over time by going to page 8. There are now licensing structures that require 50% or less of a license for each processor core on multi-core chips. As the number of processor cores on a chip increases, these fractional license requirements will become even more challenging. At the time that Oracle announced its fractional licensing approach, Gartner Group did an analysis and has said, essentially, this won't scale. And in fact, if you can see, if you notice at the top of chart 8, they talk about the 16-core chips that they expect to be commonplace by 2010, and they don't understand how that licensing policy can scale in any way. Some people have suggested that the best way to solve this problem is for middleware vendors to license their middleware at the chip level, not the core level. But let me show you why this approach won't work either. Excuse me. With the power available today in processor cores, customers increasingly want to partition their system so that an application is limited to only a subset of the total processors in a system, and they want a licensing structure to support this. This is the reason we introduced subcapacity licensing a year ago, and it's becoming increasingly common as virtualization technologies are becoming more widely adopted. And in fact, there are technologies available today that could enable partitioning below the whole processor core. We are not introducing that in this announcement, but we are very aware that we will probably have to do that at some time in the future. So here's an example. A customer has 4 processor cores, and he wants to run some kind of application on 3 of them and DB2 on just 1 of them. Under the traditional full capacity licensing model, they would have had been required to have 4 licenses. With our subcapacity announcement, however, they only require 1 because they can partition at a single core level. If we were to license at the chip level, 2 licenses would be required since the one core physically resides on a dual core chip. When using chip licensing, this would require the customer to effectively pay for 2 processor cores, even though DB2 is only being used in just one core. You could imagine that this is just going to become more and more challenging with quad core, octi core, and whatever you call 16 cores on a chip. So, you know, we have customers requiring more granularity, and what has happened is our software vendors have begun licensing below the chip level, to the core level. Now let's go to page 9. Customer focus should be on the total effective price. The differing licensing structures have caused a confusion about the pricing of software in the marketplace. On the bottom of this chart, we're showing license entitlements on the left side, but they only capture quantity of license entitlements. To understand the real price, as I said before, you have to compare the price per processor core you would have to pay in a variety of situations. And this is simply accomplished by multiplying the entitlements per processor times the price per processor. This example here uses the enterprise edition of each vendor's data server product. And in those situations where IBM may require more effective license entitlements, we are very competitive on price. And this chart uses simply the suggested retail price and its license plus 12 months of maintenance. In any particular situation, you'd have to look at entitled price, et cetera, and what the customer is really paying. But the point is the same. If you look at the RISC dual core line, IBM competes mostly with Oracle on the database in RISC dual core environment, and you can see it's 36 versus 37, and so we are effectively competitive. In the x86 environment, however, our biggest competitor is Microsoft, and in the x86 dual core environment, we are also competitive with Microsoft, the 18 versus the 16. So please turn to page 10. So all of this that has been going on over the course of the last year had brought us to the conclusion that we need a new licensing structure. The underlying hardware is changing, and the pressure on price because of that has been dramatic. So when we set about to come up with a new licensing structure, we put a set of objectives in front of us. First, we wanted to have an industry-leading licensing structure that would be able to adapt to changes we know about coming over the next 5 years, really. We also wanted to, although we wanted to get more granular, we wanted to make sure that we didn't do something that was so complicated that nobody could implement it. So we were constantly balancing simplicity with granularity. We had set as a goal not to change the price the customers pay for their middleware today on today's processors. We believe Oracle made that mistake when they announced universal power units in 2000, and we recognized it was important not to have customer budgets affected with this transition. We also recognize that a key benefit of our licensing structure through our license agreements and the Passport Advantage Agreement are that the licenses are transferable among processors in the enterprise and that we didn't want to change Passport Advantage part number structure. In other words, the license plus maintenance, maintenance renewal, and maintenance reinstatement. We also wanted to eliminate fractional licensing, but at the same time make sure that the structure was granular enough to address the issues we've discussed with multi-core chips. And it is also important that any replacement structure effectively deal with the growing differences in processor core performance that I spoke about earlier. The fact that Intel and AMD plan not to increase performance at the core level, and others, especially in the RISC environment, plan to increase performance at the core level. We had to be able to deal with that. And then finally, any new structure needs to continue to enable subcapacity and also to continue to deliver software price performance over time. So let's go to page 11 and look at what the new licensing structure is. So what are we doing? We are introducing something called processor value unit licensing. We are introducing this structure and replacing per-processor licensing in Passport Advantage. A processor value unit is a unit of measure used to differentiate licensing of middleware on processors, and over time will evolve to differentiate processor families on relative performance. Initially, however, our focus is to convert to the new processor value units without disrupting any plans and budgets. Going forward, IBM Middleware, which previously used the per processor licensing metric, will now be licensed in processor value units. We have created three broad tiers or levels, and all existing processors have been assigned to one of those tiers. The tiers or levels correspond approximately to the fractional licensing approach we discussed earlier. For each product, then, the customer will need to acquire the proper number of value units for the level of tier of the specific processor on which the software is deployed. All the processors within a given product family will be assigned to the same tier. Processor family is a group of processors within a given processor technology which may vary slightly in clock speed or cache size, but basically have a similar design and performance characteristics. We are not going to split families, which would cause customers to have to buy additional value unit licenses even when they're installing just minor technology upgrades to their existing hardware. So let's turn to page 12. Okay. To convert to existing per processor licenses, we have a conversion factor of 100. As an example, each core on a RISC dual price system, a dual core based system, required one license entitlement before this announcement. Going forward, you would multiply that one per processor license by 100 to get the new value unit requirement of 100. Another example is if a customer needed to acquire one per processor license on an x86 dual core server that had two processor cores in the old structure, they would now require 50 value units for each processor core to get to the total value unit requirement of 100. As you can see, this is the same answer as you would get if you took the one per processor license as a result of our one for two policy and multiply it by the conversion factor of 100. By using a conversion factor of 100, we have eliminated fractional licenses and simplified the task of determining the number of licenses required on a server. Another example is at the bottom here. The RISC Sun T1 octa-core chip now requires 30 value units per core times 8, or in other words, 240 value units at the chip level. You're running at full capacity. And as opposed to what we would have had to do as 2.4 licenses for the 8 processors on the chip. So let's now move to page 13. So the migration of existing processor licenses is also simple. We are using the conversion factor of 100, keep that in your mind, for each processor license entitlement as discussed earlier. With this in conversion approach, customers' prior processor entitlement investments are protected as there are no additional value limit requirements required given the customer was in compliance with our licensing terms at the time. And once again, for example, under the old structure, on an x86 dual core based system with one chip and two cores, one processor core would have been deployed for the system, or half a license per core. When migrating to the processor value unit entitlements, this conversion would result in 100 processor value units. And this equals the required value unit entitlement level for this configuration in the new world, which is two processors times 50 processor value units for the x86 dual core, or equaling 100 value units. Earlier I mentioned we are introducing this structure without impacting the price the customers currently pay. Let me show how we are accomplishing this. You go to page 14. Just like the conversion of processor licenses to value units, we use the conversion factor of 100. In this case, however, instead of multiplying by 100, we are dividing by 100 to get the new price per value unit. Let me be clear about why the price doesn't change. The price a customer pays is the product of the number of licenses times the price per license. By multiplying the number of licenses by 100 and at the same time dividing the price by 100, the net effect is no change. At the bottom of chart 14, we have an example. We are using WASMD deployed on a RISC dual core server. Originally, the customer acquired two licenses at $15,000 per license for a total of $30,000. By dividing the price by 100 and multiplying the licenses by 100, the customer will now have 200 value units at $150 each for the same $30,000. I can't emphasize enough, at its simplest, most basic level, this is multiply by 100, divide by 100. So in order to accomplish this, we have maintained our existing three tiers, and once again, the customer's price is not changing. Please go to chart 15. Let me talk a little bit about flexibility from a different, several different perspectives. First of all, through the use of processor value licensing, in combination with subcapacity licensing, we continue to make it possible for customers to consolidate servers and workloads in order to optimize their middleware and hardware environment. The processor value unit structure also allows us flexibility to provide customers with continued software price performance improvements. As processor cores improve from generation to generation, we plan to deliver software price improvements on succeeding technologies. Please go to chart 16. As new processor families are announced and as we place them in the processor value unit structure, a key objective is to deliver middleware price performance improvements over time. When we are doing this, we will consider relative performance as a factor for assigning processor value units to a new processor family. To determine this relative performance, we will look at a number of different industry standard benchmarks. These benchmarks include both transaction processing, such as TPCC, and processor-based standard benchmarks, such as SPECINT and SPECJBD. We will also assess market conditions, and we will evaluate all of this in the context of our desire to maintain as simple a structure as possible. So let's go to chart 17 now. In addition to the new processor value unit structure, we have developed some tools to help people calculate processor value units. To help determine the number of processor value units you might require in any certain hardware environment, we are recommending that you use something called the processor value unit calculator. There is a whole separate module which we will do in the next session that we have together where we'll take you through in detail how the processor value unit calculator works. It will be embedded into BPE order, which I don't believe, I'm not sure how many of you on the phone use, but it will be there. But also there's a standalone calculator, it's incorporated into BPE order. It's also the table itself, the value unit table, which has every processor announced with its associated value units is downloadable in a spreadsheet, which can be incorporated into user-developed tools or other kinds of systems. If you go to page 18, you will see just quick look at how the value unit calculator works. I would be willing next week to take you through a whole another session on all the details of the calculator. The calculator has two modes of working, one called guided, which is for the new user, the less experienced user, the occasional user, which asks a lot of questions and leads you to an answer on how many value units required. There's also something called expert mode, which is for the more experienced people, and once they are familiar with the tool, will allow them to arrive very quickly at the value unit. The value units required. I'm going to go now to page 19 and summarize what we've said and what we're talking about. We hope we have introduced with the new value unit licensing a structure that's clearer and simpler to administer for both our customers and IBM. Specifically, we're reducing the complexity of fractional licenses, and we hope we're providing some flexibility and granularity for licensing middleware, both for subcapacity and to allow us to deliver software price performance and improvements in the future. Once again, I'm going to say it again, we're not changing middleware prices with the introduction of this structure. We are, however, able to address multi-core chip technologies, and we also think that it will provide us with the flexibility to address such things as virtualization and further sub-capacity licensing capabilities. We hope and we believe this is a sustainable licensing foundation for the future. We also think that for our IBM sellers as well as all of you on the phone, that it will, for the first time, allow you to leverage more software revenue as our customers migrate to much more powerful servers, processors, and you will have the opportunity to sell additional value unit licenses in the future. I know I've given you given this to you with and very quickly, and it takes some time to absorb. There is a customer version of this presentation, which is a subset of what we have here, which we can make available for people to use. I'm going to stop now and pause and ask Amy to open it up for questions, and I hope you have something that you would like to ask. Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. At this time, I'm sorry, we do have one question. Craig Ross, you may ask your question.
Yes, I have a question about what customers are going to do when they order, say, processors for a RISC system, and then all of a sudden they decide to put the middleware on a different platform, say the x86.
Yeah.
Are they going to get a credit at that standpoint, or what's going to happen?
Just as today, we do not take returns and we don't refund the licenses that are acquired. I'm going to presume that if it is relatively a constant workload, that they will require just as many value units to run the same workload someplace else. It may not be, initially that may not be true, but it is our desire to have this be kind of a level playing field. But today we don't accept returns, and tomorrow we will not either.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Fernando Dauder. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. I'm just wondering if you guys have had feedback, or probably not, because it hasn't been really launched. But previously, customers, end users, would upgrade their chipset to a faster processor, but not have to change anything on their licensing because they had enough per processor licenses. Nowadays, since the CPU manufacturers, at least on the x86 side, are not looking at increasing speeds on their processes, but instead doing dual quad opti core chips, customers are now, for the additional performance they're getting off their chip, which before it would still be just still a single chip or a single processor, they're now being forced, because of Intel and AMD not releasing faster chips, but instead of doing multi-cores, to buy additional licenses. To me, that would seem like it's going to be a fairly negative impact coming from the end user community.
Well, let me answer that question delicately if I can. Obviously, we haven't had any feedback yet because we haven't announced this yet. However, I mean, we believe that customers, when they move to faster chips or chipsets, they are getting more throughput, they're getting more work done, so they are getting more value for the software. So it is fair and equitable for us to get a little bit of that that workload value back. We're not going to say if you double the speed of your processor, you know, you have to pay double the price. Let me make it up because we haven't done any futures. But as an example, what we want to be able to do is say, for instance, if you double the speed of your processor when you bring new hardware in, maybe we'll charge you 20% more. So that we'll deliver price performance improvement, but it's not going to be no change in price when you're getting more workload through the hardware. Now, having said that, we aren't going to get so granular that every single change in hardware or chipset is going to cause a change in price. I tried to say, and probably it's when you're getting this really quickly, it's difficult to hear it, but what I tried to say is what we're going to evaluate in broad averages and broad groupings of processors, that the price will remain the same. We're not going to change the price on every single little tweak up on processor performance and ask for more price on that. Dramatic changes in improvements or, for instance, IBM will be coming out sometime next year with its Power 6 RISC chip. That will be a dramatic improvement in performance. We think we should be able to get a little more software value out of that. So I know I'm not answering your question precisely, but we are very, very aware of that issue, and we will deal with it as time goes along. But this is a move we feel we have to make. Did I answer it or give you enough satisfaction?
I guess to a certain degree. I can see from your standpoint, but playing devil's advocate from an end-user standpoint, and pardon my lack of hardware knowledge because I strictly just do software licensing, from an end-user's perspective, let's say they had, and I'm going back to really old technology, a server that was, let's say, a P2-350. They then decided to upgrade that chip to a P2-700. They basically doubled their performance on the processor. They're still on a single processor. Nowadays, if Intel and AMD on the x86 level end up going, you know, now rather than increasing that speed on the processor, we're going to make it a quad instead of a dual, and the customer's using it all of a sudden they now have to buy double the amount of licenses, which in the past they wouldn't have because it's still on a single processor basis.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying, but what I hope you will see, and I'm not sure I can make up an example on the fly to satisfy you, but let's think about value units now. So before they had to, let's say, have 100 value units. If that were just moved to maybe a quad-core environment and now we have four processors, maybe it's only 30 value units per processor. So the price would now be, total price on that chip would be 120. So it's not, you know, you have to start thinking about the value units changing and mapping to performance in some way over time.
Yep, no, I can agree. I just see a big backlash coming from the end user community.
I would tell you that we did some focus groups on this, and while no one, everyone says they understand the logic, and maybe they've been getting a good deal in the past. Now, that doesn't mean anybody's going to be any less tough in negotiating with us or anything. We understand that. We hope we can prove to them that the value is delivered and the performance improvement they're getting out of the hardware needs to be reflected in the software. It's a good sales call, and we have to pull that together. I agree with you.
Excellent.
But we did do focus groups, and, you know, there's some of those things like you begrudgingly understand why people have to do it. It's not that necessarily that you have to like it, but we'll deal with it.
Perfect.
Any other questions?
Currently, there are no questions at this time.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Ryan, who's going to discuss the rollout.
Great. Thank you, Sue. And hi, everyone. I am going to refer now to the presentation that has in it the software distributor's pre-announced title. So if you could open that up and move on to slide 2. Slide 2 is basically acknowledging what Sue had said earlier. This is IBM Confidential, and your cooperation is required to keep this information only to those who have a need to know within the company. Do not share this information outside of the company. We are disclosing this to you today because this is such important information, and we want to ensure that you are enabled prior to the announce. So moving on to slide 3, this is a very simple timeline, but it is important that we just cover it briefly. The key date, as Sue mentioned, is the announce on July 25th. Now, if I look before that date, we are looking at for the panel's enablement taking out today the distributor pre-announce, and then next week, I believe it's the 18th, we will be doing the in-depth, the deep dive distributor skills training. This is going to take you through the tools and greater details on licensing and sales scenarios, which Sue had indicated earlier. So that's a critical call and that information was contained in the email invitation that had went out. If I look now past the announced date, on the 27th, we will be doing a on Think Thursday Sales Enablement Series. We will be announcing and holding a very similar call to today's content on that particular call, the 27th. That is for the broader IBM business partner community, the resellers, the ISVs, the SIs. So they will be driven to that particular event. Subsequently, sometime between the 31st and the 10th of August, we'll be also holding an additional partner skills training, and that will be taking place much like if the content will be very similar to next week, skills training for the distributors, very similar to what we'll be rolling out for the broader business partner community. Down at the bottom of this chart, you will see it says a 75-day legacy Passport Advantage part number overlap. On the announce on the 25th, these new part numbers will be available, as Sue had indicated. There will also be an overlap, a period of time. I believe that this date may be extended, but it's a minimum of 75 days where existing PA part number licenses can be ordered. So the sales will not be put in jeopardy if on July 26th we have a sale to go through and it's with the existing per processor, not to worry. Okay? So there is a period of overlap. That's a key channel statement and requirement you want to make sure you're aware of and comfortable with. If I look at the slide 4, the partner comms, how we are trying to reach the broader business partner community. This past Monday, actually, I think Thursday email was sent out to the partner world community, and the title was, we could not put announcement, so we masked the title with addressing multi-core processor technologies with software licensing. Make no mistake, that call will be announcing processor value units to the IBM business partner community. On the 25th, there will be much more announcement and activity, communications, including the Partner World site being updated and a special Partner World member email being sent out that day letting IBM business partners know of this announcement. We already talked about the 27th, the Think Thursday web conference, as well as the additional training that will be taking place between July 31st and August 10th. And I don't have the date in front of me, but I can find that if we need to, for when that call will be held for the for this geography. That call will be an hour and a half, and it will be a packed hour and a half call going through licensing and technology, the sales tools, the value unit calculator, sales scenarios. So I encourage you to make that call or the replay that will be available. If I go on to slide 5, the software sales deliverables which are being made available, and there will be, we are trying to make these deliverables available on the distributor website we had sent out that houses this presentation. As we get these and they are finalized, we are putting them out onto that site, so allowing the distributors to be able to access this content prior to the announce. So if it's not there now, look back in a couple days and there will be the FAQs. You will see the selling focus guide. You will see white paper, customer brochures. The announcement letter won't be on the distributor site, but it will go onto the PA Passport Advantage program page. And then the kickoff and the sales skills training will also be put there. There was mention of the value unit calculator, and that will only be available from the Passport Advantage online site for resellers. Okay. If I go to chart 6 and getting ready to wrap up my portion, which I wanted to provide an overview for you, the call to action for you all, of course, being on this call, you're satisfying attending today's pre-announce. Okay, this is a critical announcement for IBM software, and by attending today's pre-announce, great. Next step is going and attending next week's skills training calls, okay? Because that will really be targeting especially those in your companies who are doing licensing and to understand how to license and how to address sales scenarios. I mentioned before the software distributor website where we will be putting the sales deliverables prior to the announce and then being on the PA program page after the announce. So utilize that site, leverage that site. If there are those in your company who could not make today's call but you believe they need to, by tomorrow, this call will have been recorded and put there as an MP3 replay. We also invite you to extend an invitation to your value-added resellers to attend the Think Thursday call that's taking place that will go into detail and position this for your partners. The invitation, the email invite, we actually just created earlier today, and that will be put up on that business partner website either by the end of the day today or tomorrow at the latest. Okay? And again, invite your partners to your resellers to actually attend or to go listen to the replay if they can't make the live call. If you have questions regarding this content, anything, contact your partner sales reps, your local e-care team, especially post-announce. Okay? Internally, the IBMers are being taken through this at the same time that you are. So just want to give you that sort of a heads up. Finally, on slide 7, Worldwide Enablement Contacts, there's my information as well as Marcia Thomas. So if you have further questions after this call, feel free to contact us at that contact information. With that said, Amy, I'm going to ask you to open up lines for any Q&A.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please. Currently, there are no questions.
All right, then. Well, if there are no questions, again, feel free to contact myself or Marcia after this call with the contact information provided. And on behalf of Martha Vernon, Sue Swanson, and your America's Group Channel Sales Team, I want to thank you for attending today's call, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.
Hello, Amy.
One moment.
Thank you.